Welcome to The Ether. Today is Thursday, March 16th, 2023. Today on The Ether, Summer Nights, Interop Jams, Polka Dot, and Cosmos. Hosted by the Kusamarian. Let's take a listen.
How are you guys doing?
Love it.
I guess it's just you right now, Peter. You guys hear me?
I'm here. How's it going, guys?
What up, what up?
Yes, loud.
There you go. Now we're getting going. I think we got a couple of people still trickling in here, and Cosmos Joe's down there. I think he'll make it up here eventually, but I think there's they're scared. Peter, you're up here. The bulldog is here. I think he's taking a long drink there. What's up, Jay?
Hey, man, just getting settled here. It's such a great day setting up the Kusamarian program all day.
Nice. Man, those NFTs. I don't want to spoil too much, but they look beautiful.
Yeah, those are some good-looking dweebs, man. Yeah, just figuring out where to mint them, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Who's coming up here? Cosmos Joe's in the audience. That's nice.
Yeah, I think he's going to make it up here soon, and he's got a couple of people he's bringing along with him. But yeah, we'll get into a few things here. But yeah, I think the Cosmos Joe had a space with some of the guys from Kusama Kingdom. I couldn't make it, but I heard it was a good time.
I think I saw that, yeah.
Crazy. I kind of like these ones where we're just, you know, hanging out, shooting the shit, and getting to know each other a little bit better.
Like, you want to know something about me?
No, I'm talking about Cosmos in general.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's actually cool. Are we having, how about anybody from other ecosystems, Nier or anything like that?
No, I did not reach out to Nier this time around, but I think the problem with that is we got to get the days going, because Naomi drives a lot of the spaces over there, and she is, I think she's in Germany, maybe? So the time's like right in the middle of the night sort of thing.
Yeah, that's super tricky. Are you going to do the days here on the Kusamarian, or are you going to do a separate thing?
Oh, no, definitely on the Kusamarian.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, and then, I don't know, I think I was thinking about, inviting Naomi to co-host a little bit, but we'll see. I don't know, just trying to open it up to be more, inclusive of kind of a lot of different ecosystems, so... I think that'll help bring more eyes over here too,
Yeah, totally. Speaking of other ecosystems, I saw that like Arbitrum airdropped a bunch of tokens today, and now they have governance. Is that right?
I think they're dropping next week, maybe. Otherwise, I need to check my wallet, because I hear. Yeah, it's like, I think they're selling it as like a governance drop, but it's just the Arbitrum token dropping, I think.
Hmm. It looks like the governance is very similar to Polkadot governance v1, which is not that surprising, because Peter Hammond from Parity is basically running the show over there now.
Oh, really? Is Peter Hammond, is he still with Parity, or is it like formerly with Parity?
Oh, no, went over definitely there, so not. 100% definitely not with Parity.
Oh, sounds like there's a story there.
Yeah, release the deets, bro.
Talented guy.
Alpha releases his mic because he hears some alpha there. Oh, man.
I saw that. I guess I don't know enough about it yet, but I saw, part of the UI, like right away you could delegate your votes to somebody. So like, I wonder who they have, available to delegate to in the early stages of governance.
Mm.
Yeah.
They said it's 12 highly influential people in crypto, which basically means the same old 12 ETH tards mm-hmm. that are the same on across the board. So you can guess who it is.
Okay.
one of the interesting conversations I had while I was at ETH Denver was with Sean Tabrizi. And we talked about specifically about how one thing I noticed at ETH Denver is that everyone is pushing, you know, app chain narrative, this decentralized, like progressive decentralization, because they're acknowledging a lot of these changes, Ethereum included, pretty much acknowledge at ETH Denver that they're centralized and that there is censorship there and that they agreed, like it is a centralized platform, but they are building towards a decentralized future. And that brought, like, I immediately thought about Sean's, like, his talk that he gave about, you know, type one and type two decisions. A lot to be said for how you can't build backwards. Even as hard as you want to try, it just ends up being a web of, like, mixed mangled things that you want to achieve, but are just not going to be efficient in the long run. And then how L2s are kind of considering themselves almost like app chains, but they themselves can be app chains as well, or they can like launch app chains. I learned a lot about ZK Sync. There's a lot of that going on over there. And at the end of the day, it all comes back and it's like, man, everyone's building like Polkadot, but like Polkadot's obviously so much further ahead. I think, you know, the big thing that gets us is that we don't really have a robust smart contract platform just yet. You know, we're getting there. And that's something I'm looking forward to, because the cross-chain calling of smart contracts not only will save Polkadot a lot of speed in terms of development, but you will actually, you know, be able to build the apps everyone wants much quicker and much easier, instead of having to like create the same smart contract on another chain to execute a similar function. And then, did you write it correctly? You know, is what are the, you know, there's a lot of dangers when you continually try to replicate codes. And I don't know if like Peter can speak to this a little bit more, but I think that was the most exciting part. It's like, hey, we made a lot of correct type one decisions. And obviously there's, you know, some missteps there, but the type two decisions that we're correcting because of Substrate, I like that is so big. Like, I guess it just never clicked as much as it did during ETH Denver, is that they have to really work hard and get everyone on board to do a simple, like, you know, I say a simple upgrade, but they literally have to hard fork it. And gosh, like we don't even think about that.
Yeah. I mean, you're right to say, and referring to Sean's talk, like we've been making the right decisions on the technology side, basically since Gavin and the team built V1 of Ethereum. The bigger problem now, obviously we see more and more protocols, including Cosmos, shifting towards what Polkadot's been building for years. But it's a hearts and minds game. It's not a technical superiority game. And right now, and for the past however many 5 years, 6 years plus since Ethereum has been prevalent, it's what Vitalik anoints, right? So like if it's an L2 or if it's Optimism or whatever a rollup is, like these are things that were described in the Polkadot white paper years ago, but people really want Vitalik and people like him to sign off on the scaling solutions they use. A big part of why Coinbase chose Optimism, like they mentioned Vitalik's roadmap like 15 times and their technical description of why they chose Optimism. It's like they're following Vitalik. And this is still crypto in general is still very much a founder idol focused ecosystem, despite being claimed to be decentralized. Like Bitcoin says there's no leader, but they will not deviate from what Satoshi wrote before Hal died. It is the way it is. So like we need a strategy and a movement towards the understanding that we're both there on a technical level beyond where Ethereum L2s and rollups are, but we don't have the check of approval from the one guy everyone looks to say, oh, is this going to work? Ironically, he's not even a dev, but it's not the issue here. It comes down to people not wanting to do their own their own analysis of what they're building on and continue to sort of follow the golden goose, which is a complicated situation to be in because Vitalik is an incredibly good business development lead for Ethereum. And it's something we all have to push back against because his bags are heavy and his decision making and sort of directing of people is not altruistic, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, definitely got a lot of narratives. You know, I think for tonight specifically, what I'm really interested in, and as soon as some of these guys join up here, it's like there was a lot of talk about what do you value more, like a true decentralized network, even though it might depend on a relay chain or like chain sovereignty, and then looking at that, because Cosmos obviously has IBC, which I really admire. I think IBC is really good and actually something we're striving to kind of have this really robust, strong, like cross-chain communication between parachains here on Polkadot. But it all goes back to like sovereignty of the chain for them. And they really value that. And we value like shared security and like how do we look at decentralization on each side? And why maybe the Polkadot is not necessarily more of a, like you were talking about from a technical standpoint, but we see it more as a right decision for the long-term play to choose shared security instead of chain sovereignty, right? You have cross communication with IBC and that allows a lot of, you know, fun stuff to be able to be created. But if it's not safe and secure, which has been, I mean, the Euler hack, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, but dude, that's another DeFi hack. Like, bro, I don't want to touch any DeFi right now because you just never know. Like, you know, put whatever shekels you can, you know, afford to lose in there for sure. Because like these things, obviously, you know, we were not spared in that. You know, Moonbeam had the hack, but it wasn't Moonbeam. It was the bridge on the Nomad side. So there's that, but still. You know, we just talked about last week about some DeFi, you know, hiccups, you could say, big ones that we've had. But yeah, it's just very interesting to hear that perspective on that side. You know, sovereignty over, you know, shared security.
Yeah, yeah, I agree there. And, you know, I think that'll be something really interesting to dive into. Cosmos, Joe's having a little bit of trouble with Twitter, so he's kind of recycling it and seeing if he can get up here. But I did want to, you know, keep an open invite too for anybody else in the Cosmo ecosystem. We don't bite too hard, I promise. So feel free to come on up if you'd like to. But while we wait on Cosmos Joe, you know, Peter, you did mention something really interesting, and Alpha, you know, you touched on it too, that this hero worship thing, right, is, I definitely see that. And it's funny you said he's not, you know, Vitalik's not a dev, but a lot of people really follow what he says and his vision. And it is the golden goose idea. I definitely see that. But that is something Cosmos has also done a really good job of, seems like from the outside, at least, avoiding. You know, they do have kind of a sprawling ecosystem in that way. And there are a couple of guys, it sounds like, that have a lot of influence, but doesn't sound like there's one person.
Yeah, I would say they haven't avoided it at all. I mean, it's Zucky and
really?
It's, I mean, there's two or three of them instead of one, but that basically generally all following Zucky and Sunny and Jack, taking direct.
Sunny's the Osmosis guy.
It has been like that with that core group of original both founders and developers since the launch of Cosmos. Obviously, with Jay in the mix as well, which it's all. I mean, there's a couple of interesting conversations with early Ethereum people, including people that went on to build Polkadot and people that went on to build Cosmos, about the failures of Ethereum early on to actually keep all of these people, including Gav, in the mix in Ethereum, because of the like failure of leadership and also like the failure of Vitalik and the Ethereum Foundation to sort of allow other people to have a voice in that mix. And that also goes down to like Joe pushing people out. None of the Ethereum history books actually cover the history correctly, because there have been so many conflicting and heavily financed opinions on how things actually came together. But I would say, like, the Cosmos world definitely has stronger centralized leaders than Polkadot, I should say, at this point. Like, Davin does not do really many public appearances at all. He doesn't talk to media that much at all. He's not out doing business development the way like Zucky or Vitalik are doing for Cosmos and Ethereum. He's like not involved in that. He just wants to write code. So the question being, like, in the case where the entire ecosystem, I mean, all of crypto wants to see a strong centralized leader in order to adopt, use, follow an ecosystem, what do you do in the absence of a strong inspirational leader who's out there on Twitter every day and in the media every day, the way someone like Vitalik is? And the answer is, a potential answer is you can't win without having someone like that in the ecosystem who is driving things forward, because never in the course of human history has a decentralized community really come to universal success and power in the way that a government or a company or a freaking cult has, right? So it's a clashing of concerns between people who are fully decentralization focused and those who fully understand what it takes to make a movement succeed. And not a lot of decentralized movements have ever actually succeeded. Linux is GNU is successful because of Linus Torvald. It's successful because of Linus. Microsoft is successful because of Bill Gates. Apple is successful because of Steve Jobs. There were other players in the space that could have competed, but people latched on to these inspirational leaders, and that's the reason they can be trillion-dollar companies now. I don't believe that. While I believe in decentralization, I don't think that we get to success as Web3 by being completely decentralized from day one. It's a complicated balance for sure.
Yeah, I think one of the things that Sean mentioned that to me, I asked him, can I quote you on that? And he, you know, because we talked about what are the best decision for users, or what is the best decision for Polkadot? Like, why has certain decisions have been made, and like what makes them best? What, like, if you really ask, I asked him, I was like, what makes it that best decision? And he returned the question, which is like, what makes that one best? And we talked a lot about, it is not about best decisions from a Polkadot standpoint. It is about the right decisions. And the right decision aren't always the best decisions today, but they're right because in the long run, they will be.
Yeah,
that's true. I don't disagree, but I also believe that there's a clock and it's ticking, and the making the right decisions over the best decisions could lead to your demise, right? Like, there's a huge, huge amount of people who want to use this technology now to have applications that function for their needs now down to the retail level. Easy use case or easy UX, obvious use case, simple to use, all this. And those users are flooding into protocols that are usable today, even if they're technologically shitty, and they will win because they grab all the market share in the short term. So it's like, you can't be purely focused on making all the right, quote unquote, long-term decisions, which I'll also note is like the right decision from a developer's or engineer's perspective versus a builder of a business or an entrepreneur or sort of like a market visionary's perspective is often in direct conflict.
Developers
who don't have any sort of guardrails on what they're building towards will build towards some future that no one else can understand. Thus, you get in a situation where you're explaining deep technical decisions that are possibly the right answer. But the best answer is, we made this decision, it can works today, and you can use it now, simply. Otherwise, you could get trampled in that race, deep back in the mix rather than leading it. We're not
there yet. I hear you on that.
Make more best decisions rather than right decisions in the near term in order to stay in the race. And we need some parachains to really take the fuck off.
Yeah, I hear you on that. And that was what I was going to say is right. Sometimes it's a matter of perspective, which you touched on there. And speaking of perspective, Mayor, welcome up. I see your hand up. Thank you for being patient. Thanks for coming by.
Yeah. Hey, guys. Thanks for having me up and enjoy the conversation. Just wanted to touch real quick on the decentralization conversation and, you know, just what Peter mentioned about Cosmos. Like, I've been following the Cosmos ecosystem for a long time. And, you know, he mentioned that there's like three or four main devs, which is kind of true, but they do not run the show. It's extremely chaotic. Peter, I don't know if you know that the Atom 2.0 proposal that got voted down in November, were you following that at all?
Totally aware. Yeah. I didn't mean to say it wasn't chaotic, but, you know, those four folks are public and leading a conversation in a way that folks from the Polkadot side of the mix have been less excited about doing.
Yes.
Like every day.
They are more of the, what would you say, public facing or outspoken devs that were on? Before Cosmos enabled IBC like 2 years ago, there was like Sunny and, like you said, Zaki and Jack Zamplin. They were all a part of the same company, but then it all kind of split off, you know. Sunny started his own chain, Osmosis. And Zaki has his own chain, Sommelier, and, you know, it's they're doing like ETH vaults and stuff like that. And then Jack Zamplin's running his validator business and all that. But yes, they are more of the forward facing figures in Cosmos, but the governance can be chaotic over there, to say the least.
I saw a little bit of that, and I follow Cosmos Joe, and, you know, he'll post every now and then about some governance stuff going down, and looks pretty crazy. And, you know, on Kusama, which is, you know, the experimental kind of version of Polkadot, we definitely have some chaos there too. So I hear you on that. And speaking of kind of different versions of things in the decentralization on the Cosmos side, I was curious about, you know, interchain security. And I saw Sunny post something a while back about a few different versions of shared security that Cosmos is looking at. Do you have any, you know, insight into that, or if you could expand on that for us a little bit?
A little bit. The main hub, Cosmos Hub, just did an upgrade that's going to start allowing for interchain security. But then there's the other version called Mesh Security that Sunny and some other devs from Juno are working on. And so there's two types of that shared security that you're talking about. So I believe the initial one, the what everyone's calling the interchain security, is just now like in like V1. So I think it was just in this last upgrade. But that's kind of where they're going with the hub. But anyways, I had a quick question for you guys real quick about Polkadot. I understand the whole parachains, and, you know, I was doing some research on that last year. If my understanding is correct, like, to become a parachain, you have to put up or hold so much.
Go ahead.
I guess my question's on Engine.
Sorry about that.
Isn't Engine one of the parachains, the gaming, and just like I haven't followed Engine in a long time, but I know it was specifically going to be built around gaming and blockchain gaming. Mm-hmm. Is you guys know much about any progress with that?
Jay, I don't know. I actually haven't heard much about Engine, but. Several years ago, I was kind of into Engine when, like, you know, when I was trying to learn about crypto and the YouTubers told me about it. But I haven't heard much of what they're doing. We have some other interesting gaming projects going on right now, like Yuna's very interesting. And we also have an interesting NFT standard that's kind of primitives for role-playing games, which is really interesting. But what was your initial question there about getting a parachain?
No, I couldn't remember what the requirements were to get a parachain, but I remember when Engine was trying to.
Yeah.
But anyways, I think a lot of these gaming projects are realizing that not everything has to be on chain, you know. But I know Engine was really into the NFTs used in gaming and stuff like that. So I mean, I really feel like that, you know, you guys know a lot of the buzzwords and stuff like that, that, you know, gaming is going to onboard like the next, you know, 5 million people as far as gamers go. But, you know, it's in the middle of this bear market. I think everyone's just trying to be like heads down and build stuff out, you know, right now.
So. Yeah. One cool thing that happened, we have a dev on one of our parachains called a Star. He's the CTO. And he recently created a game where he has storage on one of our parachains, and he's running, I don't even exactly know what he's running. He's running a data server or something on another parachain. So he's kind of using like multiple parachains to support his single game. And he says, this is the first unstoppable game, which is a kind of an interesting concept. It's a simple game, but that's kind of one of the early use cases of this kind of cross-chain implementation. It's really neat.
Yeah. And then just real quick, the other kind of big project that they're working on Cosmos is NFT swaps between chains, because it's with IBC, with, you know, inter-blockchain communication, like just as easy as you can swap, you know, a token from one chain to another, that they're planning on doing that with NFTs. It's still a token. It's just a little bit different of a smart contract that is not live yet, but I believe they're beta testing it right now. They're calling it like game of NFTs or something like that. The validators are all testing it out, trying to do NFT swaps between independent chains.
That's cool. I think that's coming on our side too, right guys?
Yeah, I think they're going to be rolling out on Kusama here in a bit. It was supposed to be in like the last runtime a little bit ago, but I think it's coming soon. Probably next couple weeks, I'd say. It's a question mark.
Yeah, I think it's just transfer of the asset. Nothing too fancy, but yeah.
Yeah, but on the gaming side, there's also a really interesting one we had up a couple weeks ago called Everloot. They are moving over to Moonbeam very soon, and it's kind of what Jay was talking about. We have this like unique NFT primitive. It's called Remark. I don't know if you've heard of that one before, but does a lot of cool things with NFTs and really lets a lot of things be on chain without really being too cumbersome, and really lets you do things like, you know, equip swords, you know, really do some really innovative stuff within the game itself. A lot of DeFi, they have like an in-game marketplace, things like that. So that's another interesting one to check out as they come live on Moonbeam soon. They were, you know, experimenting on Kusama there for a little bit, but are moving over that direction. I mean, there's a lot of really cool stuff going on both sides of the ecosystem for sure. And you speak of IBC, I mean, that has been adopted far and wide. And, you know, it's something that when we think about it, we think of XCM, but there are some other teams too that are kind of trying to bridge that gap. Are you familiar with?
Go ahead. On top of this, though, IBC's adoption is because it is easy to adopt, because it is at its core not trustless. It's easy to adopt because you don't need shared security. Shared security is the only way to have trustless interoperability between chains. So this is like the big meta issue, and also comes down to like, do people actually care about trustlessness and decentralization in the long term in crypto? If they don't care, IBC will be broadly adopted. If people do care about decentralization, it'll still see adoption, but it would need to adapt to be more trustless, right? So the bridge hub on Polkadot is basically a light client's implementation of a bridge similar to IBC, but it has the same security issues where the security is only as strong as the weakest chain. But then once you're within Polkadot, the entire security of the entire composable Entrop ecosystem is the entire security of the entire chain, right? So it is a, I would say, a fairly thick line in the sand as to like whether or not people in crypto will actually care about decentralization and trustlessness in the long term.
Who do you have to trust in IBC or using IBC?
The weakest chain and who controls the weakest chain. So if you are, say, bridging, you know, Polygon to some Cosmos chain using IBC, Polygon is a 5 of 8 multisig that's held by the founders of Polygon. Although they have high economic security, the actual security of that chain is incredibly low because the trust assumptions are basically coming down to like the founders of the protocol at the end of the day, who are shacked up in penthouses in Dubai right now. So I would say that's not a particularly a business. I wouldn't go into business with that situation. You know what I mean?
Well, in what you speak of, kind of the weakest chain there, that's what I found really interesting about Composable's model was that they wanted to inherit the security of Polkadot to be the strongest link in the IBC chain. Because if they wanted to be, you know, this hub between, like, giant liquidity hub between these two, you know, interoperability giants, that was kind of the vision there. I know, of course, there's been a lot of things that have happened with Composable, but I'd see a question in the comments, and Mayor, you know, I don't know if you wanted to comment on this or if you had any thoughts about it, but one of our listeners, Mike, was curious how the Cosmos ecosystem was, you know, thinking about Composable's role, and because it is, you know, a Polkadot parachain at the moment.
I don't know much. You're talking about Composable Finance?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know that much about it. But Cosmos Joe DM'd me and said he's tried rebooting his phone, I think, twice, and Twitter is still not letting him up. It was doing that to me like about 5 or 6 days ago. No matter what, I couldn't get on stage. So,
yeah, I've tried to invite him as a co-host and all sorts of things, but it's just, unfortunately, it's not working out right now.
But anyways, yeah, to answer, I don't know that much about Composable, but it's funny you guys mentioned Polygon because I kind of like what you guys were talking about earlier with Ethereum. It's like you have the spectrum, you know, of centralization and decentralization, and you've got like ETH and Polygon on the one side of the spectrum, and then you have like Polkadot and, you know, some of the Cosmos chains that are on the other end of the more decentralized part of the I don't know, the graft or spectrum that you want to talk about. But I think it's just really interesting, like the building that's happening, because it's like, I think I heard someone mention, I don't know if it was you, Peter, that like some people aren't going to really care about decentralization. And I think that's probably true. Like most people probably aren't really going to care a whole lot about it if they're just into NFTs or if they're just into, you know, trying to find a little bit of better yield in crypto, you know, it like once it gets more adopted and stuff. So it's going to be interesting to see.
I would go as far to say at like, you know, 95% of people in the world who we would want to adopt crypto, which is basically everyone, give zero shits about decentralization. They may give a shit about the concept or like you give them a if this, then that sort of situates a statement that is pro decentralization, and then ones that's against decentralization. 9 times out of 10, they would likely choose the pro decentralization statement. But when picking the protocol or picking some tech to use, they're not going to care and not going to go that far into it. And if they find out later that it's not decentralized, it will not matter to them at all. And this is a thing where, like, how do you win with the decentralization ethos in a world where no one cares about decentralization and the education necessary to get people to a place where they're really decentralization focused will cost basically every protocol in existence today would have to put up $5 to $10 million each into a marketing and awareness campaign about decentralization globally, that probably has a 75% chance of failure. So it's, how do you win in that situation? And it's extremely complicated. And I think it's in part, like, you just need to, like, you know, speak out of both sides of your mouth. You need to talk decentralization to the people that care about it and talk about all the other benefits to people that don't, who you need anyway. It's an incredibly difficult situation coming from someone who comes from politics and is used to sort of like straddling two sides of an argument. This is the most difficult one I've ever seen, ever.
Well, you know, one thing that I completely agree with you, Peter. One thing that I never thought about until I was at ETH Denver was actually some people don't want decentralization because they actually want control. And what I mean about it's the people that are businesses that are wanting to build on these app chains. They don't want to have to like all of a sudden change their business strategy or whatever the case may be because governance votes that something happens on a relay chain. Like if that were ever be the case, you know, some businesses just don't want to leave it up to other people to make decisions that may affect them, right? A lot of the things that you have nowadays in the world, you see a lot of people moving away from that kind. You see a lot of businesses wanting to move away from the US because of some of these, you know, restrictions and have like, you know, banking in Ireland or banking in the Bahamas, et cetera, because of regulations. Very similarly, a lot of these companies aren't going to want a governance model that they don't necessarily have a big input in, or even if they do have an input in, maybe they just don't want to relinquish the control, right? Because they're trying to grow business the way they see it, the way they want to. And yeah, they don't, maybe they not, they don't want to, you know, give that up.
Yeah. I'm curious, asking this question kind of to everybody's up here. You know, I've seen some of these L2s that are pretty centralized right now, especially like, you know, Optimism is one that comes to mind. I'm not, you know, extremely technical or know all the stuff dev talk, right? But I know that Rob had highlighted something about OP's tech stack, and there's like a really, you know, important bottleneck there that is basically only controlled by like the OP core team. And it has to do with like deploying dApps and accessing the network and so on and so forth. And so I'm curious, you know, some of these teams have also laid out roads to decentralization. Do you guys think that's just lip service until they get adoption and then they just brush that under the rug? Or do you think that's legit and they're actually trying to work towards that? And I think that highlights, you know, this problem Peter brought up, but I'm curious everyone's thoughts.
I'm happy to jump in and say something with this. So I'm Josiah here speaking on behalf of DStore. Like, you know, we're building a decentralized marketplace. Well, that's our objective anyway. And on this journey, we've found that it's really complicated. There's so many centralized aspects that we need to build to enable the platform to work. You know, like computing, for example, a back end. You know, right now everyone talks about, you know, being fully decentralized, but most of these platforms aren't, and rely on, you know, Amazon Web Service for hosting it and whatnot. And I think, like, I've seen, you know, it's very easy to jump on the whole decentralized as a hot word and say, yes, we're decentralized. And in actual fact, most projects aren't. It's just one of those words that can be used. But I think, like, as we're working with Filecoin at the moment and trying to find a decentralized compute, and they've got one coming out in a couple of months. And I think, like, as this tech matures, there will be like options for people to for developers to build more decentralized in a more decentralized way. But it's just about that tooling and being able to, because it's not just about transferring money. It's about, you know, hosting data securely, and there's a whole, like, yeah. So I think, like, we just gotta hope that people still push that decentralized vision and ethos, and as the tech matures, that we mature with it and sort of keep fighting for that, the decentralization and self-sovereignty. I guess that's what everyone needs to be aiming for.
Hey, quick question. Have you learned about Fala Network? Because they literally offer a decentralized compute cloud.
Yeah, I've been looking into it. We're just starting this journey with the decentralized compute. I have spoken to some experts, and they do feel like Filecoin has, you know, they've got the infrastructure and the size that you know, may be the winning horse in the race type thing. But it's a difficult decision, and we're only sort of exploring that now. We were at the start, we were using the blockchain as our back end. But once we look at drop shipping and stuff, we needed to create a back end. So that created another problem for us to solve.
Doing, yeah, compute and storage now?
Yeah, so they've got a compute solution coming out next
like
month.
GPUs,
yeah.
Or still
I can't pronounce it. It's Portuguese for COD. But yeah, it's a decentralized compute that's coming out. Yeah.
Well, there's.
You know, I'd also look into Crust Network. They do all the decentralized file storage. So there's a lot of solutions that are coming online right now that might end up being cheaper and maybe better in the long run.
Just, I would say Filecoin's a difficult decision to make just now. It's like how to say this the right way? There's so many moneyed interests involved. It's going to go a different way than everyone wants it to, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it all matures. Like, we're all like looking for different ways. Idealistically, we'll have a few decentralized compute options. So if one ever failed, there'd be a backup, you know, contingency. Essentially, like, there's so many layers to this, you know, and it's finding that solution and backing that horse that does rise to the top and be the most decentralized.
Yeah, I actually had a question on that too, because you touched on something that I think would be an interesting topic to expand on too, like the idea of Filecoin kind of having an established infrastructure and some tooling that may be, you know, there and familiar to use versus maybe using something that is still developing and maturing. How do you think about that as something, you know, that you look at and wanting to integrate?
I think like, I like being early, getting in early to projects and maturing, scaling with them. I think that's a big, big advantage. And that's sort of why I guess we're in the Polkadot ecosystem. I definitely want to be to sort of, yeah, I think it's hard. Like a lot of, you know, most of the money seems to, and the big names, you know, people seem to go to them first. It's hard. It's hard. Like I think at this stage, like I'm researching Filecoin, like they have budget to facilitate a grant to build there for us. So that's really cool. And that's attractive as a startup, cause we're still like, you know, early stage startup. That's attractive, as well as the infrastructure. It's attractive too. Because if they ever get heat from, you know, a nation or someone, then the size does matter and the coverage matters. Definitely got to have that compute to run anything, you know, decentralized.
Yeah, I hear you. And I agree. It's not an easy thing to answer. And I think I see it all the time, right? At least just from an outsider perspective, seeing these teams grow. It's hard decisions to make, right? Like, what do I build with? Should I go for the thing that is maybe still nascent? What exactly is going to meet my needs, and so on and so forth. And so those aren't easy things to answer, like you're saying, but I was just curious about that because it is something from a Polkadot perspective that I think I see a lot. Is it's like, okay, that maybe, quote, the tooling isn't all there yet, but it continues to grow and continues to mature and people are starting to adopt it more. So, thanks for sharing on that. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to try to throw it back to Mayor over there. I do see you have a couple, or an NFT of your PFP, of course, but what NFTs excite you over there in Cosmos? What are you involved in?
There's several different NFTs. This one that I'm, this is my PFP. It's one that's on Evmos. It's like a EVM chain That's like a, it's not, it, EMMOS is like a Ethermint. It's like a hybrid Cosmos Ethereum chain. Joe, that's funny. Joe can't come up because he could comment on the Orbital Apes. But it, as far as some of the other NFT projects, there's some funny stuff going on over there. There's a lot of experimenting going on. There's a couple projects are kind of moving over to Polygon because that's kind of where the volume is. But as far as the main NFT marketplace is called Stargaze, and there's one project that I really like, or NFT project that just came out, is called Pixel Wizards. And it's these tiny little pixelated wizards, but it's like an interactive NFT. And you can, like, if you hit a key on your keyboard, different wizards will give you a price quote of different coins. So, like, you could have a wizard that will, you hit, like, F2, and it gives you the Bitcoin price updated, like, accurate. So that was a cool one. And then, I don't know, there's some, a lot of cool projects over there. It's on Stargaze.
Yeah, man. Funky was telling us about the wizards. I think I don't know if you've seen him around, but the funky one has been floating around the cosmos a little bit. And he got excited about the wizards, and the corporation, I think, is the other one.
Yeah, the corporation is a different, really different type of setup. But anyways, yeah, there's some cool stuff over there. I posted in the comments an article I found on the shared security. So this was just a recent upgrade that the hub did 2 days ago. It was like, it's called the Lambda upgrade or something like that. So I posted an article down there in the comments about, it's a Medium article. So it's, like I said, that's their first like V1 of shared security. So I guess it's like other chains can use the hub security to run their own chain. So kind of like the parachain thesis deal you guys got going on.
Awesome. Thanks, man. I appreciate that. I just posted them to the top of the space for people that want to learn a little bit more about what the Cosmos version of shared security is there. So yeah, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for sharing a little bit of that with us. I also been looking at another one here, Neutron, a little bit. I hear they're coming live here pretty soon and trying to solve a couple of problems there with ICS coming live. But I was curious if, don't want to corner you. I know we've asked you a lot of questions, but I'm happy to open it up to anybody else too who has some insight into some Cosmos chains they've looked into.
Yeah, I might try to send this space out. I know someone who's on staff with Neutron, and they're going to be one of the first chains, first or second ones to use that shared security model. So yeah, it's really interesting. You know, I think it's hard to keep up with it all. You know, like the tech's moving so fast.
I'm curious, just because it's absolutely ripping right now. That spectrum of decentralization that Mayor brought up before, where do you guys honestly think Bitcoin falls on it? Like, how unstoppable do you guys actually think Bitcoin is?
Two mining pools, super centralized.
Ooh. Super centralized, all right.
Oh, man.
One of the worst Nakamoto coefficients in crypto, followed closely by Ethereum. Oh, by the way, Polkadot is the most, or should I say, is the highest Nakamoto coefficient in crypto. Bitcoin's a joke. No one in crypto should spend any time thinking about it, and should spend more time doing everything we can to flush it down out of the top 10. It shouldn't exist anymore. It's like as if like the very first computer ever was still running the entire banking system. Oh, wait, the first computer ever is running the current banking system on Cobalt. It's the exact same problem that has created the huge amount of the messes in the financial system we have today. We have to look at history and understand that Bitcoin is not the future.
What's the choke point of the, okay, go ahead, Mayor. Go ahead, Mayor.
Just real quick, Peter, that's an interesting take on Bitcoin. I've I've heard some of the arguments. Is it just real quick? Is it because there's so few devs, is it because the technology is
V1? Mm. Austrian yeah. economics don't fucking work. It has no security guarantees. Once the last Bitcoin is minted, no one uses the chain. You can't build on the chain. The actual community of people who are supportive of Bitcoin on Twitter is tiny compared to the people that are interested in newer technologies, but it has this first mover advantage and has some regulatory clarity, which is why institutions can hold on to the balance sheet and boomers like it, because it's the simplest, you know,
they feel safe,
simplest understand.
They can understand it because it's safe.
It's 100% yeah. a boomer coin. It's 100% yeah. a boomer coin now.
And it's, when the boomers die out,
it's better for us.
So when you mention it mirrors the banking system, and you mentioned like COBOL, are you talking like the SWIFT, like the rails that the traditional
SWIFT runs? way more advanced than what, like, you know, the banking mainframes run on. Little backstory. My father is a mechanical engineer, and I had the privilege of being followed by a security guard the whole time I was going through a SWIFT data center, helping him deal with some of their energy needs. And it's a highly sophisticated system, and it's primarily what the credit card transactions are run on. The credit card transactions are not the core banking functions of, like, wiring money back and forth between banks, how banks reconcile their balance sheets with each other. That is literally on machines in the basements of banks that, like, you know, when you they're on all the time, and they make, like, you know, cranking sounds. Like, I can't believe they cannot change it, they literally cannot. And it's a combination of years of, it's working, we don't understand technology, don't change what's working, you know, like, don't fix what ain't broken fallacy. And that on top of just complete technical incompetence by the people running banks and finance forever. I've known a lot of people who go into finance, like, they're not the sharpest tools in the shed. And they
but it's called finance,
money
Peter.
Motivated
it's finance.
Finance. Exactly. I
mean, you have the legacy. It's like legacy dinosaurs. But anyways, exactly. we got Cosmos Joe up. And then if you guys got any questions on Neutron, my good friend down there, Soy 2, can answer any questions on Neutron you got. He's got the most awesome PFP that I've seen in like a year. He's got the one of the king meme ducks. So anyways, I hear what you're saying as far as the legacy finance system. It's crazy.
And they're now in purely entrenched financial interests. They are in every room where every decision is made. So obviously regulators and policymakers are going to come after crypto. These are the people that literally raised them. So it comes down to, like, I was thinking about this earlier today, like, we need policy and standards in politics passed that basically shines a very bright and very negative light on any policy and any system that was built during the robber baron or the robber banker eras of the 20s, 30s, 40s, and then the 50s, 60s, and 70s, where first the industrialists and then the bankers basically took complete control of the economy and all the systems that run it via legislation and regulation. All of these policies need to be looked at with a high amount of scrutiny. Many of them should have automatic sunsetting clauses when they're passed, so that, like, every 10 years, every policy that regulates an industry needs to be eliminated, rewritten for the modern age. Yeah. But
because it gets way too behind the technology,
are financing all the politicians and telling them, don't change the stuff we passed 80 years ago to regulate the banking system. It works for us. And in reality, it only works for them, not us.
Yeah, got it.
Cosmos Joe, welcome up.
Welcome, Cosmos Joe.
Is he perma-muted?
No.
What's going on here? Oh, man, that's just a tease then. Just hurts the soul even more. We got a Soy 2 coming up as well. He's has the spinning wheel of death, but maybe he'll make his way up here. Peter, I completely agree with you there on that. And like the traditional finance and just like the inherent nature of people in that a day and age just wanting to, hodl power, right? Basically.
Yeah. And everything that they've during the Silicon Valley Bank stuff, like people were tweeting about Chase and Bank of America websites going down and like not being able to handle the throughput of people trying to get on their front ends to deposit funds into their bank. It's hilarious because it's like what we're dealing with as an industry now, but the bankers haven't even figured this out. They don't even know what a high throughput day actually looks like.
So you're telling me that they have 3 days?
It's bad.
It's 3 days to get my funds to transfer because they literally have to take 3 full days to make it happen.
Well, the FedWire piece is different. That's like permanently. So like if anyone doesn't know, like if you wire money to someone or transfer, if you think you're actually directly transferring dollars into someone's account in the traditional banking system, it takes at least 3 days for that to actually settle. And the only system in which you can guarantee that money is in fact transferred from your bank and your account to the recipient's bank and their account is by wiring it. If you use any other system, it's not actually a proper transfer of funds. It is a paper transfer that's just an Excel spreadsheet. It is not actually what the bank is holding on its balance sheet, which is the core. It's the thing Bitcoin proved it could do. Bitcoin, thank you. Go fuck off. We can all do that now. Let's build something better. But it is that bad just in its standard operation. But then when, say, 100,000 people want to transfer $100 billion out of Silicon Valley Bank, the front ends of these websites that are servicing those transfers can't even handle the traffic and they all go down. This is while it's been bad for startups, it's bad for the economy. The last week or so has, I think, reproven the point of crypto, which I will take some solace in, despite it being a very difficult time for many people I know and work with and many startups whose products I use and trust.
I don't want to brag or anything, but in Canada, we can email each other money. And they can, I can email my friend money and they can buy food with it right away. It's pretty amazing. But I will say that it does feel kind of like we've entered this weird twilight zone. Like this week, it was crazy how we had this massive bank collapse, but it doesn't really feel like it. Like everybody kind of just seems to be going on like normal. And it's like, I don't know, like the Fed steps in, they're going to change all our diapers again. And nobody really cares. It's super weird.
Yeah, I mean, it's for me, that touches on the idea of like, in the end of the day, do people really care about decentralization? It's the same idea. Like, do people really care if the Fed steps in and wipes everyone diapers if, the world continues as normal?
Can't go on forever.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It can't go on forever. Eventually something's going to break. And maybe that's what... there's a lot of arguments and crypto Twitter, the conspiracies can spiral out of control. But, this Operation Choke Point 2.0 that I don't know if you guys have seen that around, but, the idea that a lot of these regulators shut down these crypto banks and are putting in new custodians of these funds under the guise of, you can't work with any crypto based companies and things like that. Like, it seems like a systemic attack, but I've always been a person who's been against, jumping on that boat, but it's getting harder to deny stuff like that.
I've heard mixed reports on this, both from media, like the more public facing stuff, and then from direct conversations I've had. As far as I can tell, Signature Bank was not shut down because of the crypto operations that they're doing. Barney Frank was either trying to divert blame from potentially decisions that he helped make while he was on the board of Signature Bank and all those interviews he was given. But the point still stands that, yes, there's obviously just whether or not the bank shutdowns were a part of this, there has obviously been a concerted effort by a number of regulators to make crypto harder, crypto banking harder. I will say, though, again, looking back at our last 3 years working with SEC staff, FinHub and many staffers at the SEC and other regulatory bodies do understand and do like the basic tenets of crypto, but they very reasonably see the risks and are very worried if they don't make moves to protect consumers from these risks. Because as we know, with retail crypto customers and even retail finance, like legacy finance customers, like people are actually not smart enough to make all of these decisions on their own. And regulators are in place to protect those people from themselves as sort of childish relationship as that seems. There is a need for it, and it's another sort of balance that we need to work on as an industry. I think working with regulators, but still building tech that is not super influenced by what they think or say from day one, is a way to balance that out. But if you never pick up the phone and call them and say, hey, this is what we're doing, what do you think? We're not necessarily going to change everything if you think differently, but we want to be in an active conversation, is a better position for the industry to be in than the current position, which is like, fuck the SEC, fuck the regulators, like, let's vote everyone out of Congress. Like, this industry is minuscule compared to any other industry that is lobbying any regulator or any elected official. I can't overstate how small an industry crypto is compared to the many other industries that help support in politics and regulation in the United States and beyond. Like, we're tiny. So we have to, while our valuations might look significant and big, we do need to like think twice about, like, you know, our sort of positioning towards those bodies. They are going to have a say in how these things turn out.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe we just need to lobby with all of our customers' funds. That could maybe make some moves there. But no, I hear you on that. Like, you
this
know,
is too friendly of a conversation, though. Let's get into a fight between Polkadot and Cosmos. I'm ready to go.
I know, man. You came up here like you were one of the first people up here. I was like, this guy's ready. He is ready. Hey, I've been trying to get some Sol 2 up. I guess he's having trouble too, but. Soy too, maybe. David's coming
bummer.
Up.
That's a bummer. I can step. Maybe if a few speakers step down, it might work. But Twitter's been doing this for a couple weeks, I think.
It sucks. We've never had a problem like this before.
Hey, yeah.
But that said, bless Elon, our Lord and Savior.
Amen.
Hey, Peter, quick question. You know, I've been following a lot of what Rob has been talking about in terms of valuable block space, like what makes it valuable and why that's ultimately the driver in these blockchains. If you get rid of Bitcoin and you start competing, like I would go as far as to say Bitcoin is valuable because it has proof of work and it's the only one that's been able to show that it has proof of work, thus people trust in it, even though the proof of work could be now very centralized, right? You have people mining all around the world, but a large majority of it, you know, is controlled by a few entities. When you have all of these proof of stake networks around the world, all offering block space and offering the same, what makes them independent or valuable? It's really the nation state that they each control and the value they create on chain. Thus, the block space that they have becomes valuable because of the stuff that it offers.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, bro, if you use that, Polkadot's not very, you know, not very valuable right now.
I would say it was the most valuable because it is the most secure, most available on-demand block space that exists in crypto. If you spin up a Cosmos chain, if you say you had resources to launch a chain today and wanted to launch a blockchain and you decided to either launch a ETH layer 2 or launch a Cosmos chain or even just a solo chain, you will need to spend a massive amount of money in order to recruit a validator set, and a community and users and builders in order to create value around that protocol that you've built that will drive the economic security of that blockchain. On Polkadot, if you showed up tomorrow with either just a good idea or enough DOT, you can raise your hand and say, I want access to the most secure available block space in crypto on Polkadot, and secure that within a couple of weeks without having to run really any of your own validator operations, without having to recruit any of these staking providers to run your network for you, and without having to do any significant sort of community development to drive price of a token that would then drive the security of the network. No other protocol in crypto offers that today other than Polkadot. Secure on-demand block space is going to be a commodity, and no one else has a mechanism for distributing that fairly today other than Polkadot.
Do you not? I mean, okay, I completely agree, but I'm playing almost like
plus decentralized sequencers, whatever you want to say, like the big ETH decentralization problem. They're calling what we call collators on Polkadot, sequencers on Ethereum, and I'm not sure that there isn't really a version of them on Cosmos or other solo chains. That is in and of itself is a multi-year engineering task to accomplish, as we see like Optimism and Arbitrum doing now, like rolling out roadmaps to decentralize sequencer sets. Like that's 5 to 10 years down the line before they actually figure it out, develop it, and then put it in production. It's live on Polkadot today.
Yeah, I mean, and I'd like to combat that point. You're not wrong in all that, but if everyone can boil water, it doesn't mean that everyone can make soup. And right now, the market is basically saying that ETH soup is the best soup, and everyone wants a piece of it. That's the bowl that they're that's the soup that they're filling their bowl up with. And like you said, it's
there's flavor. Everyone else has just got stock right now, basically.
Yes. And so what I'm saying is, Polkadot, you can boil a lot of water. It doesn't make it soup right now. Obviously, we're going in a better direction. But, you know, that's kind of the market speaking in terms of like ETH is valuable and the staking is valuable because that is the soup is so delicious there and it has all these nutrients and people fucking like putting stuff in it. Polkadot's getting there. But, you know, I don't want to have that argument of like, well, you know, it's more valuable because they offer more stuff and et cetera. Like you, like I would say like that the reason why Bitcoin has its value is because of that, going back to that kind of thing. I know you don't like it, it's a boomer coin, but I think that's why they will stay.
Totally agree. And I would, it also goes back to my earliest point. It's the projects, the people, magnetically attracted to a strong inspirational leader, and Vitalik is, while neither particularly strong or inspirational, a figure that people like just take him on his word on the way everything in technology is going to go, even though he didn't have that much to do with the way Ethereum works today. They want that and see that, and Ethereum offers that. Solana, a big reason Solana has been successful is because their two co-founders spend more time doing interviews and doing business developments than writing code, right? It's a tech specifically, but also business broadly works on cults of personality. Full stop.
Yeah, bro.
A company been successful without a strong leader motivating people in a direction. And Ethereum has that in Vitalik.
Yeah, I would say none of them have any sauce on the boy Charles Hoskinson, bro. That guy's got no chain, nothing working on it. Yet has like $14 billion? Ain't nobody got nothing on my boy Charles Hoskinson. That's a
biggest
that's a
YouTube channel in crypto. It's a YouTube channel with a chain, sort of.
I mean, Vitalik wish he could kiss his left toe, man.
Yeah, I mean, Vitalik's roadshow, travel schedule, talking schedule, interview schedule since the day Ethereum launched is, I have to give him credit for that. Like, he has been a digital nomad on the road nonstop since the thing launched. and it's paid dividends. He hasn't written a single line of code. He doesn't know how to code. He's commented on and put his byline on a couple of research papers, that none of which been particularly interesting. The whatever soulbound tokens thing is just like a recapitulation of digital identity, which has been being worked on for decades. The Ethereum white paper even is just basically a combination of, or the Ethereum white paper, I'd say, is basically a combination of the Bitcoin white paper and Nick Szabo's paper on smart contracts from like the late 80s. It's not original work. It's just reading stuff and repackaging stuff. And then he goes and talks about it every day, 365 days a year, to business people, to enterprises, to the public, to developers. And it's working. It is the reason Ethereum is successful. And other founders like Charles has seen that and run with that sort of Jesus complex sort of strategy, and it works. Cardano is basically useless, still top 10.
Yeah, man. I mean, exactly. There's a lot of power in that centralized message. This is one thing I broke. You know, we had a lot of back end discussions in Polka House about like having a centralized message that the community can push and get and rally behind. For me, it was Internet of Blockchains. One thing I will say is I purposely went out and tried to like find people's description of like Polkadot when they came around, and we were at the Polkadot pavilion at ETH Denver. And I was like, hey, what do you know about Polkadot? And surprisingly, the answers weren't bad. You know, a couple guys were like saying, oh, you know, I don't really know too much. That's why I kind of want to learn more about Polkadot. So we had the conversation. I got too many Ethereum 2.0 answers that I just didn't like. I couldn't believe like they thought Ethereum 2.0. That was one of the first things I heard in like 2019, and I hadn't heard it since then. But I couldn't believe it was still being talked about. A lot of people referred it to as the Internet of Blockchains, right? Which is also, they wanted to know what the difference between that and ICP was, which I don't really know too much about ICP protocol or whatever that is. The other thing called it, what did they call it? It's some kind of network. I can't remember what they said, the specific word for it. But I was actually very surprised to hear that the people that actually, you know, said something correct were actually more informed than I believed it. So, which led me to the beginning. It's like, these people are just asleep right now, but we need to wake them up. So there is people out there waiting to use the technology, understand that they follow it from a distance. They're more of a warm audience than they are a cold audience. The pool is probably bigger than we, you know, expect it to be, because we're deep in a bear. We just need to reach out to them. I think having a unified message about that.
For sure. Both in the Cosmos and the Polkadot ecosystem, I would say the Polkadot ecosystem is in much more dire need of making more friends and other ecosystems than others, which goes back to the creation of Polkadot, the founding of Polkadot, the sort of fact that we were the team that built Ethereum and then left Ethereum. There was so much baggage, both on a personal and protocol level, the DevOps hack, all that ETH governance stuff, the butting of heads between Joe and Gav going back so many years, like the meta scenario around Polkadot is much more complicated than almost any other protocol, which I've also been working through with many other people for years. It does come down to just making more friends and explaining, because there's also a new generation of people coming into crypto that aren't impacted by all that baggage that goes back literally a decade now.
I'm curious about that, Peter, because I agree with you, like making more friends as time goes on is really going to help as new people, you know, the next hundreds of millions of people will try to onboard into crypto, fingers crossed, right? But, you know, you touched on something that was really interesting that I've always been curious about is, the time that Parity was over on Ethereum, and you said, you know, Gav and Joe butted heads, and there were a couple of things that just led to, you know, Parity eventually breaking away. I wonder if you could expand a little bit on those things, or if you'd even like to.
Sure. I mean, so it's a long and sordid past. For those in the chat that aren't aware, Parity and Polkadot was founded by Dr. Gavin Wood, the co-founder and CTO of Ethereum, who, for all intents and purposes, was the engineer and the designer of the way Ethereum, specifically the EVM, works to this day. The EVM has not changed really at all since Gav designed it, notably without Vitalik, down to the point where the opcodes in the EVM, as they're laid out, you go back to the yellow paper in one of the pages, the opcodes in Ethereum are laid out like GAV something something something. So like Gav is in the, he put his name in the opcodes of Ethereum. Like the they haven't changed to this day in the EVM. And they all say in the order in which they're written into Solidity, it's, they start with G, gas, and then account, and then V is, I can't remember off the top of my head, but like that was sort of a fun dev joke that Gav inserted into the design of the EVM. So again, for all intents and purposes, the reason Ethereum works is Gav. And the biggest problem with the founding of Ethereum is that Vitalik was a child when he wrote the white paper, basically combining Satoshi and Nick Szabo's, or I should say Hal Finney and Nick Szabo's, writing on Bitcoin and smart contracts, and then needed to lean on a fully capable software engineer to actually be able to build it. I actually read recently, or heard recently, if people are able to go and find a copy of the original Ethereum white paper before it was made public and compare it to the one that was made public, the original Ethereum white paper that Vitalik wrote was very, very different than the white paper that was made public, and that Gav had been involved after the first version was written. And then the second version was completely different, but only had Vitalik's name on it for one reason or another. So you go back into all these little moments in time over the development of Ethereum, and then Vitalik being an immature and not particularly business or company ready individual, still hasn't graduated from college. I really highly recommend that he go and complete his education. It was not really the person to put a team together to build a thing. And the first thing I would do to anyone out here who's looking to build any company or project, or even a freaking intramural dodgeball team, don't make 8 fucking founders / leaders of your project. It's going to create mess. Charles didn't deserve to be there. Joe didn't deserve to be there. Mihai didn't deserve to be there. Almost no one but Gav and Vitalik really deserve to be in that development. And it created huge amounts of infighting, backstabbing. You can read a lot about all this in the 3 various Ethereum history books. But I will say, all
yeah. What do you think about very what Camilla's influenced book
by Lubin? Camilla's is the best. Laura's is the second best, and I wouldn't even read Matt Leising's one. I think it was bought and paid for basically by Lubin. But just to say, if you want the Lubin perspective on how Ethereum was built, read Matt Leising's book. But Camilla's was definitely the closest to the truth, despite her doing significantly less research on it than Laura did. Laura's book kind of got lost in having too much detail and her having talked to honestly like too many people. It sort of comes across as a little bit more confused about what actually happened. But even Camilla's book isn't perfectly accurate, right? Like there's legal consequences of authors writing things that they can't fully verify in their reporting, right? So like Charles, the reason Charles was fired from the project in that fateful meeting in Zug, like, has never been fully revealed. There's this talk around this folder, this dossier that Taylor Gehring put together about like some untoward behavior of Charles. There's a lot of reports of his abuse of employees, but none of that actually ended up in the book because, as an author, if you put that in there, even if 10 people told you it, unless you have like verifiable facts that you can lean on, an author can land in deep legal trouble if they report that in a book without the relevant backup or without the backing of their publisher to go back them in court if they're taken to court over it. So a lot of situations like that were kept out of all three books, despite them being completely true, because they didn't want to take the risk. But reasonable reason that those stories aren't fully told. And I do expect them to be told in time, though.
Yeah, we were making a video about, you know, the history of Cardano. So we asked ChatGPT, bro, it brought up all the sauce about that, like about how the falling out happened. People didn't want to work with Charles, or it was suspected that people didn't like working with him.
Yep.
And they didn't like the way
the bestiality stuff, but there was like animal porn accusations as well.
Oh, bro, he didn't say that.
Jeff John Roberts tweeted about it not that long ago, which is the only reason that I mention it now. I take no legal responsibility for mentioning this. I'm referring to Jeff John Roberts of Fortune's sent some from multiple people information about a certain Ethereum co-founder being into a certain thing. But anyway.
Wow. I'm gonna drop it there.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not even gonna say it. I was about to say some euphemism. It's not worth it. Jay, what do you got?
Good question. Hey, do you guys this isn't always the case, but do you guys see a distinction between leadership and calling all the shots?
No, you don't have to call the shots to be a leader. You can be a leader in different ways. Sometimes actually not calling the shot is the leadership, because part of being a leader is like pulling a group together. And sometimes that means like, hey, let's think like leading the group into making a decision that affects everyone.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I think that sometimes even the person who's calling the shots or, you know, thinking that they're the leader isn't really the leader, right? So I think it's kind of a double-edged sword in that sense. But in the end, being a leader is more about, you know, embodying the people that are around you, bringing everybody up and finding the best way to unlock their potential. And that's a hard thing to do throughout. But I would say it's not necessarily calling shots.
Yeah, I think I agree with Scott Galloway, who's a professor at NYU and has a couple podcasts, how he describes there's really only two types of leaders. One is the player coach, who's in the mix with the employees, understands all the different things that a team, a company, a project, a movement needs to do and accomplish. And is in the mix, helping them, motivating them, teaching them alongside how to accomplish those goals. And then the other type of leader is the inspirational motivator, where they aren't necessarily in the trenches day to day with everyone that's doing the task, but on a regular basis, they stand up in front of the group and say, this is why we're here. This is what we're doing. This is where we're pointed. And this is why we're, you know, be that motivating force to do it. And if you're not doing one of either of those across all verticals in the company or all departments within the company or movement that you're trying to inspire, you're not a leader.
Damn, I feel like in our ecosystem, we have a lot of player coaches.
True. And we need more motivational speakers for sure. But yeah, I think that in a developer-led ecosystem, it's definitely more player coaches, but the players are playing and coaching primarily in the developer part of the equation. And as we all know, the best tech does not, in fact, win almost ever in history. So we can play and coach towards the best tech, but if we're not addressing all of the needs of a company, of a ecosystem, of a network, it's not the full picture of what a leader needs to do to be successful historically.
Yeah, that's personally why I've really appreciated what Rob's been doing lately, honestly, stepping up a lot and being a good voice and motivator for, you know, the community at large. Alpha, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so I was really encouraged, actually, by Derek and Rob. Both of those, I mean, speaking of Sean, of course, but, dude, Derek, you getting out there and really pushing Moonbeam's message, meeting with different teams, talking to the people he's meeting, how much of the groundwork he's actually doing. I didn't know anything about it, but obviously, after talking to several teams, they're saying like, no, we're in frequent contact with Moonbeam and their team and their developers, et cetera. I went to the Moonbeam little thing there, their booth, and spoke to different teams at different times there. Was really encouraged by that. But what is Peter from the Polkadot side? Obviously, it's an EVM chain. What are your thoughts on? Or what is like, what would you say? Could you speak? I guess you couldn't, but you know, from the mantra of Polkadot using Substrate and Frame and smart contracts via Wasm and Ink, how do they look at the EVM side doing so well? Is it, you know, you were talking about making friends. Wouldn't you want, isn't there a heavy interest in pushing Moonbeam, even though it is EVM?
I will say first that I think that Derek is one of the most well-rounded, best founders and leaders, not just in the Polkadot ecosystem, but in all of crypto.
I agree.
Has the rare combination of Web2 enterprise SaaS startup experience and success, in addition to then understanding the ethos, the culture, and the needs of building in Web3. So obviously a huge fan of Moonbeam and everything that he's done and is going to do. On the EVM side, obviously, while EVM is at some point going to be as antiquated a technology as the Bitcoin blockchain is today, it is one of the most popular dev stacks in all of crypto, and we would be extremely retarded not to incorporate it into our ecosystem and use it as a piece of the tool stack for people wanting to build in Polkadot to have available, right? And on top of all that, we're the team that built it. So what better team to help facilitate a version of the EVM in a more advanced next generation blockchain network than the core team at Parity, who's been working alongside Gab since they built and launched Ethereum. So we're not going to kill any of our children. We're not going to play favorites unnecessarily. Derek also understands this, right? Like EVM is not the full future. It's a part of it. Right? Like there will be people who build on EVM probably forever. And he's said publicly numerous times that success for Moonbeam would include projects built coming into the Polkadot ecosystem, building on Moonbeam because it's an EVM chain, but then maybe deciding once they get big enough to go build their own parachain, which may or may not be an EVM chain itself. So it's a part of that bigger picture and understanding sort of where the devs are, where the users are, but also supporting what I see as one of the most put together, well-rounded and talented founders, builders, and leaders that we have in not just the Polkadot ecosystem, but all of crypto.
Yeah, nicely said, man. Appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, every time I hear Derek talk, it's like so well, you know, well spoken and grounded. And like you mentioned, at least from my perspective, it's like he's got this extremely broad view on what EVM's place is. But then they're doing a lot of really interesting things on how to bridge that into what Polkadot does. And, you know, as those things mature, it's going to be really interesting to see how those things bridge. And there are a lot of teams who are also doing that too. Like, you know, a Star has their like XVM and a lot of these ways to kind of bring in the current blockchain kind of dev community and marry it with the future slash where a lot of the big tech devs are already at, which is, you know, you guys, a lot of these people already know is like Wasm, right? And, you know, Rust and, you know, all these languages that are able to have much more capabilities than what EVM can do right now. At least that's what I am seeing.
So it's really interesting to see those teams really start to develop new solutions there. But guys, we did it. We saved this space, I think. I think we saved the space. Y'all did a great job. Appreciate you guys all coming by.
I love just hanging with Cosmos people and not fighting with them. It's usually what happens when Zucky and Sunny and I and others are just having dinner. We never talk about Polkadot or Cosmos. We just talk about the general stuff. So this was certainly an interop jam. Appreciated everyone chatting.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for coming by. And yeah, that's what we, you know, we'll definitely have more of these, and we're going to open it up to everybody. And we'll reach out and try to get some people by this next time around too. And hopefully Twitter does not rug us, but appreciate everyone for coming by tonight. We are going to be doing this again next Thursday, 9:30 Eastern, same time. And next week we are going to have, oh, can you guys hear me? I just lost you guys. I'm back.
Can hear you.
We are going to have, sorry guys, let's pull this up real fast. It's been a packed week. Oh yeah. We're having Mandala and the one, the only, Hoon from Astar come by. To talk about gaming NFTs and, you know, what's going on over in
the game that was mentioned
community.
Earlier. It's all chain. All of it. It's crazy.
It is pretty crazy, man. And like leveraging like all these different parachains. That's the exciting stuff, man. That's the stuff I'd like to learn more about. So we'll see you guys next week. Thank you guys for coming by and much love. Good night.
Thanks, y'all.
See you guys. Good talk.
Night, guys.
Thanks for checking out another episode of the Ether. That was Sama Nights, Interop Jams, Polkadot, and Cosmos. Recorded on Thursday, March 16th, 2023. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. And if you want to keep listening, head on over to TerraSpaces.org/donate and show some support, man.
When we blow through the dust, volcanoes erupt. No one ever guessed that the game would be tough. Keep your hands off when the play is a bust. Plain old and just, so we keep it on the one. Blast off on the two. Help me see the three. Third eye open wide, checking out the scene. Laser beam focus, Starscream jokers. Living off the fat of the people they approach. Tell me what happens when the land fights back. With the cliffs at our backs, make the last stand matter. No one ever planned for the famine on deck. We was walking all erect with the dead man swagger. Sitting in a little den, envisioning the middlemen. Listen to the fiddle man, play a little ditty then. Talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian. Lost in the maze, trying to make the next billion. Talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian. Lost in the maze, trying to make the next billion. In a little den, envisioning the middlemen. Listen to the fiddle man, play a little ditty then. Talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian. Lost in the maze, trying to make the next billion. No one gave a shit till the drugs all dried up. Everybody died from a bad batch of Lysol. But it didn't matter, we was all hyped up. When the pedal lit the metal, he just didn't have the right skill. Watched in the daytime till the night curfew. Rats in a cage till they make time to murk you. Got a little job that falls under my purview. We gotta get this mob away from the bird's view. Gotta find cover, wipe off the bird poop. Ride off the work while you try on the worst juice. Blinded by perps who try to reverse truth. Slide like Fox News just trying to lie to you. Eating up the slop like a bunch of hungry vagrants. I can't wait for the day they lock us up in stasis. Mock up a basement, could call me resilient. Waiting for the internet to make me a billion. In a little den, envisioning the middlemen. Listen to the fiddle man, play a little ditty then. Talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian. Lost in the maze, trying to make the next billion. Talk about how all the leaders seem reptilian. Lost in the maze, trying to make the next billion.
Terra Spaces.